This is Bible Basics 4:9, Hell. The popular conception of hell is of a place of punishment for wicked immortal souls straight after death, or the place of torment for those who are rejected at the judgment. It is our conviction that the Bible teaches that hell is the grave where all men go at death. As a word, the original Hebrew word Sheol, translated hell, means a covered place. Hell is the anglicized version of Sheol. Thus, when we read of hell, we are not reading a word which has been fully translated. A helmet is literally a hell met, meaning a covering for the head. Biblically, this covered place, or hell, is the grave. There are many examples where the original word Sheol is translated grave. Indeed, some modern Bible versions scarcely use the word hell, translating it more properly as grave. A few examples of where this word Sheol is translated grave should torpedo the popular conception of hell as a place of fire and torment for the wicked. Let us consider this one. Let the wicked be silent in the grave, that is Sheol, at Psalm 31:17. They will not be screaming in agony, they are silent. Another verse, God will redeem my soul from the power of the grave, and that is Sheol, Psalm 49:15. In other words, David's soul or body would be raised from the grave or hell. The belief that hell is a place of punishment for the wicked from which they cannot escape just cannot be squared with this. A righteous man can go to hell, the grave, and come out again. For instance, in Hosea 13:14, this is confirmed. I will ransom them, that is God's people, from the power of the grave, which is Sheol. I will redeem them from death. This is quoted in 1 Corinthians 15:55 and applied to the resurrection at Christ's return. Likewise, in the vision of the second resurrection, see study 5:5, death and Hades, that is Greek for hell, delivered up the dead who were in them. That is in Revelation 20:13. Note the parallel between death, that is the grave, and Hades. See also Psalm 6:5. Hannah's words in 1 Samuel 2:6 are very clear. The Lord kills and makes alive, that is through resurrection. He brings down to the grave, that is Sheol, and brings up. Seeing that hell is the grave, it is to be expected that the righteous will be saved from it through their resurrection to eternal life. Thus, it is quite possible to enter hell or the grave and later to leave it through resurrection. The supreme example is that of Jesus, whose soul was not left in Hades, which is hell, nor did his flesh see corruption, that is in Acts 2:31, because he was raised. Note the parallel between Christ's soul and his flesh, or body. That his body was not left in Hades implies that it was there for a period, that is, the 3 days in which his body was in the grave. That Christ went to hell should be proof enough that it is not just a place where the wicked go. Both good and bad people go to hell, that is, the grave. Thus Jesus made his grave with the wicked. That's Isaiah 53:9. In line with this, there are other examples of righteous men going to hell, that is the grave. Jacob said that he would go down into the grave, hell, mourning for his son Joseph, that's in Genesis 37:35. It is one of God's principles that the punishment for sin is death. That's Romans 6:23. Romans 8:13, James 1:15. We have previously shown death to be a state of complete unconsciousness. Sin results in total destruction, not eternal torment. That we find in Matthew chapter 21, verse 41, or chapter 22, verse 7, and Mark chapter 12, verse 9, James chapter 4, verse 12. As surely as people were destroyed by the flood, that's Luke chapter 17, verses 27 and 29, and as the Israelites died in the wilderness, as we read about in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 10, on both these occasions, the sinners died rather than being eternally tormented. It is therefore impossible that the wicked are punished with an eternity of conscious torment and suffering. We have also seen that God does not impute sin or count it to our record if we are ignorant of His word, that we see in Romans chapter 5, verse 13. Those in this position will remain dead. Those who have known God's requirements will be raised and judged at Christ's return. If wicked, the punishment they receive will be death, because this is the judgment for sin. Therefore, after coming before the judgment seat of Christ, they will be punished and then die again to stay dead forever. This will be the second death spoken of in Revelation chapter 2, verse 11, and chapter 20, verse 6. These people will have died once, a death of total unconsciousness. They will be raised and judged at Christ's return, and then punished with a second death, which, like their first death, will be total unconsciousness. This will last forever. It is in this sense that the punishment for sin is everlasting, in that there will be no end to their death. To remain dead forever is an everlasting punishment. An example of the Bible using this kind of expression is found in Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 4. This describes God's one-off destruction of Pharaoh's army in the Red Sea as an eternal, ongoing destruction, in that this actual army never again troubled Israel. He made the waters of the Red Sea overflow them. The Lord has destroyed them to this day. One of the parables about Christ's return and the judgment speaks of the wicked being slain in his presence. That's in Luke chapter 19, verse 27. This hardly fits into the idea that the wicked exist forever in a conscious state, constantly receiving torture. In any case, this would be a somewhat unreasonable punishment. Eternal torture for deeds of 70 years. God has no pleasure in punishing wicked people. It is therefore to be expected that He will not inflict punishment on them for eternity. And that you can read about in Ezekiel chapter 18, verse 23 and verse 32, chapter 33, verse 11, and compare 2 Peter 3:9. An unbelieving Christendom often associates hell with the idea of fire and torment. This is in sharp contrast to Bible teaching about hell, the grave. We read in Psalm 49:14, like sheep they are laid in the grave, that is hell. Death shall feed on them. That psalm implies that the grave is a place of peaceful oblivion. Despite Christ's soul, body being in hell for 3 days, it did not suffer corruption. We read that in Acts 2, chapter 31. This would have been impossible if hell were a place of fire. Ezekiel, chapter 32, verses 26 to 30, gives a picture of the mighty warriors of the nations around lying in their graves. And I quote, "The mighty who are fallen in battle, who have gone down to hell with their weapons of war, they have laid their swords under their heads. They shall lie with those who go down to the pit." This refers to the custom of burying warriors with their weapons and resting the head of the corpse upon its sword. Yet this is a description of hell, the grave. These mighty men lying still in hell, that is their graves, hardly supports the idea that hell is a place of fire. Physical things, for example swords, go to the same hell as people, showing that hell is not an arena of spiritual torment. Thus Peter told a wicked man, "Your money perish with you." That's in Acts chapter 8, verse 20. The record of Jonah's experiences also contradicts this. Having been swallowed alive by a huge fish, Jonah prayed unto the Lord his God from the fish's belly, and he said, "I cried to the Lord out of the belly of Sheol," that is hell, "I cried." That's Jonah chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. This parallels the belly of Sheol with that of the fish. The fish's belly was truly a covered place, which is the fundamental meaning of the word Sheol. Obviously, it was not a place of fire, and Jonah came out of the belly of Sheol when the fish vomited him out. This pointed forward to the resurrection of Christ from hell, or the grave. See Matthew chapter 12, verse 40. Figurative fire. However, the Bible does frequently use the image of eternal fire in order to represent God's anger with sin, which will result in the total destruction of the sinner in the grave. Sodom was punished with eternal fire that we find in Jude verse 7. That is, it was totally destroyed due to the wickedness of the inhabitants. Today, that city is in ruins, submerged beneath the waters of the Dead Sea. In no way is it now on fire, which is necessary if we are to understand eternal fire literally. Likewise, Jerusalem was threatened with the eternal fire of God's anger due to the sins of Israel. "Then I will kindle a fire in its gates, and it shall devour palaces of Jerusalem, and it shall not be quenched," that you read in Jeremiah verse 9, chapter 17, verse 27. Jerusalem being the prophesied capital of the future kingdom, and that we see in Isaiah chapter 2, verses 2 to 4, and Psalm 48, verse 2. God did not mean us to read this literally. The houses of the great men in Jerusalem were burnt down with fire. That's in 2 Kings 25:9. But that fire did not continue eternally. Fire represents the anger or punishment of God against sin. But his anger is not eternal. We read that in Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 12. Fire turns what it burns to dust. And we know that the ultimate wages of sin is death, a turning back to dust. This perhaps is why fire is used as a figure for punishment for sin. Similarly, God punished the land of Idumea with fire that would not be quenched night nor day. Its smoke shall ascend forever. From generation to generation it shall lie waste. The owl and the raven shall dwell in it. Thorns shall come up in its palaces. That's Isaiah chapter 34, verses 9 to 15. Seeing that animals and plants were to exist in the ruined land of Idumea, the language of eternal fire must refer to God's anger and his total destruction of the place, rather than being taken literally. The Hebrew and Greek phrases, which are translated forever, means strictly for the age. Sometimes this refers to literal infinity, for example, the age of the kingdom, but not always. Isaiah chapter 32, verses 14 and 15 is an example. "The forts and towers will become lairs forever until the Spirit is poured upon us." This is one way of understanding the eternity of eternal fire. Time and again, God's anger with the sins of Jerusalem and Israel is likened to fire. "My anger and my fury will be poured out on this place, that is Jerusalem. It will burn and not be quenched. That we find in Jeremiah chapter 7, verse 20. Other examples include Lamentations chapter 4, verse 11, and 2 Kings 22, 17. Fire is also associated with God's judgment of sin, especially at the return of Christ. For behold, the day is coming, burning like an oven, and all the proud, yes, all who do wickedly, will be stubble, and the day which is coming shall burn them up. That's in Malachi chapter 4, verse 1. When stubble, or even a human body, is burnt by fire, it returns to dust. It is impossible for any substance, especially human flesh, to literally burn forever. The language of eternal fire, therefore, cannot refer to literal eternal torment. A fire cannot last forever if there's nothing to burn. It should be noted that Hades is cast into the lake of fire, Revelation chapter 20, verse 14. This indicates that Hades is not the same as the lake of fire. This represents complete destruction. In the symbolic manner of the book of Revelation, we are being told that the grave is to be totally destroyed, because at the end of the millennium, there will be no more death. Let us consider Gehenna. In the New Testament, there are 2 Greek words translated hell. Hades is the equivalent of the Hebrew Sheol, which we have discussed earlier. Gehenna is the name of the rubbish tip, which was just outside Jerusalem, where the refuse from the city was burnt. Such rubbish tips are typical of many developing cities today. For example, Smoky Mountain outside Manila in the Philippines. As a proper noun, that is, the name of an actual place, it should have been left untranslated as Gehenna, rather than be translated as hell. Gehenna is the Aramaic equivalent of the Hebrew Ge Ben Hinnom. This was located near Jerusalem, as we find in Joshua chapter 15, verse 8. And at the time of Christ, it was the city rubbish dump. Dead bodies of criminals were thrown onto the fires, which were always burning there, so that Gehenna became symbolic of total destruction and rejection. Again, the point has to be driven home that what was thrown onto those fires did not remain there forever. The bodies decomposed into dust. Our God will be a consuming fire. That's what we find in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 29, at the day of judgment. The fire of his anger with sin will consume sinners to destruction rather than leave them in a state of only being singed by it and still surviving. At the time of God's previous judgments of his people, Israel, at the hand of the Babylonians, Gehenna was filled with dead bodies of the sinners among God's people, that we find in Jeremiah chapter 7, verses 32 and 33. In his masterly way, the Lord Jesus brought together all these Old Testament ideas in his use of the word Gehenna. He often said that those who were rejected at the judgment seat at his return would go to hell, that is, Gehenna, into the fire that shall never be quenched, where their worm does not die. That's Mark chapter 9, verses 43 and 44. Gehenna would have conjured up in the Jewish mind the ideas of rejection and destruction of the body. And we have seen that eternal fire is an idiom representing the anger of God against sin and the eternal destruction of sinners through death. The reference to where their worm does not die is evidently part of the same idiom for total destruction. It is inconceivable that there could be literal worms which will never die. The fact that Gehenna was the location of previous punishments of the wicked among God's people further shows the aptness of Christ's use of this figure of Gehenna. Joachim understanding of henna came to be misinterpreted as a symbol of hell that is supposed to be a place of fire. Gehenna, since ancient times, has been the name of the valley west and south of Jerusalem, from the woes pronounced by the prophets on the valley. That's Jeremiah 7:32-19:6, and compare Isaiah 31:9 and 66:24, because sacrifices to Moloch took place there. And we find that in 2 Kings chapter 16 verse 3 and chapter 21 verse 6. They developed in the 2nd century BC the idea that the valley of Hinnom would be the place of a fiery hell. It is distinguished from Sheol. That is from a book called New Testament Theology, and it's published in London by SCM in 1972, and that page is